Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on the radio.
Oh, yeah, the Weekend Report is. I kind of sound like Macho Man Randy Savage there.
Oh, yeah.
The Weekend Report is on your radio. That was bad.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
Started good, it got bad. Welcome to the Weekend Report, FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here with you. Producer Ryan Wiggins back in the studio, but Chris Arps is not in the studio. He is enjoying some Easter vacation with his family. He is out of town celebrating the holiday. So we have with us in studio for this entire first hour, Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher from the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show. Great to see you, my friend. How are you?
Howdy, doing all right. Great to be here again.
Yeah, you bet. So quickly, I know we do this every time, but you know, you never know who's listening for the first time.
Yeah.
Remind folks who you are and tell them about the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show.
Yes. Well, I am a black conservative Christian rocket scientist. Oh my gosh, I forgot my pitch.
He forgot his own resume.
That's your line. That's your thing.
Well, there are so many things, so you know, keeping track. But I on some level I think I have a unique perspective, and I bring that to my YouTube show through commentary about religion, culture, and politics.
Yes.
So you know, I produce about 10-minute or so videos on any kind of topic that fits into those categories. So anything from what we're probably going to be talking about today, like the Mueller report.
I might
do something on that. I don't know. And then and I could be talking about something esoteric, like my last video where I talk about the very nature of truth itself.
Oh, yeah. I am a huge, as you know, a huge fan of the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show. I highly recommend you go and you check it out. I even used one of your videos in an argument that I was having on Twitter this week.
I think I saw that.
I tagged you in it.
That was awesome. Thank you.
I was like, I don't want to have this argument with you. Here's the argument. Here's Gabe's video. That's my argument.
This guy says it.
That is exactly right.
I want to be that guy for everybody. I want everybody to link to my videos on social media and say, hey, this guy has got the thing.
Here's my argument.
Here's my argument. I don't have to put it now into however many characters.
Right. I don't feel like making the argument myself. He does it perfectly. Here, watch this. I love it. I'm a big fan, so go and check it out. At this point, there's a really nice little portfolio built up there.
Yeah, I think I'm getting a good number of videos now, so hopefully I'm building my bench here, so
yeah.
I can go back to those every once in a while.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to produce.
No, it's great stuff. Go on there. If you haven't seen it yet, you can do a little binge watching. I've done that before. But go and check out St. John the Philosopher YouTube channel. Once you type in St. John the, maybe a P and H, maybe it'll finish it.
Yeah.
And Gabe's the only one. So St. John the Philosopher, and he's the only one there. So it's pretty easy to find. And really, really great stuff. We have got a great show for you coming up in the second hour today. Skip Weber will be in for the Weird News Challenge, the return of Trish Gazelle from our sister station, 102.5 KZK. She is coming back to try to avenge her recent losses. She was on a winning streak. And then she went on a losing streak.
Got to renew that rivalry.
And then she disappeared.
Yeah.
And now she's back.
All right.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're also going to talk to Pastor John Michael Brown coming up in the next segment. Having to talk to JMB in a little while. Want to talk to him about this idea of slavery reparations.
Oh, yeah.
Gabe and I actually made a video on this that you can see on the Weekend Report page at 971talk.com/Weekend Report, or you can go to the 971 YouTube channel and you can go to the Weekend Report playlist. I think it's one of the very first videos there on the channel right now anyway, and you can see our take on that. But I want to continue that discussion with Pastor John Michael Brown. And the reason, if you're asking, like, why are we talking about reparations? It's because Senator Cory Booker has introduced a bill in the United States Senate that is if it passes, which it won't, I don't think, it would instruct the United States government or a branch of some section of the government to study how reparations would work. And the senator said that this was a way of fixing the divide that white supremacy, the cloud that white supremacy has put over the country for hundreds of years, and this is a way to start getting rid of it. So that's happening in the United States Senate. So yeah. I want to talk to Pastor John Michael Brown about that. But start the show how we do every week with what we call the Week in Review. We'll try to get through all the big headlines of the week, but we've got to start with the Mueller report. Nothing bigger than on Thursday morning, the Mueller report dropped. We finally got our eyes on it. We finally got to see actually what's in the report, not just William Barr's summary of it. Let's start just from the very top. Initial thoughts from the Mueller report. What did you think?
Mueller.
Yeah,
we're down in the tunnels now. Well, the first thing I thought was, yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah.
It's pretty much it. The conclusions, or at least the information inside that we've been made privy to, at least so far. You know, nobody's really actually read the 428 pages total of the report, I don't think. Is that there was no collusion. There was no attempt by the Trump administration to join forces with the Russian agents who were trying to interfere with our election to come up with some conspiracy to get him elected. That didn't happen. That's one of the most solid conclusions coming out of that.
Now, and that was the basis of the
And that's the basis of the investigation, right? So now what we're seeing though is this kind of secondary aspect of the obstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there were questionable things that Trump either did or said that don't rise to the level of criminal,
right?
But are shady,
yeah,
right. And that's
like
kind of what everybody. Yeah, sounds like a politician, doesn't it? Or
sounds like every president ever.
Or you could put it this way: it sounds like a guy who's prone to temper tantrums, responding to constant false accusations by a gigantic media machine saying that he did something illegal with a foreign entity. So
great point.
Think about it that way. Somebody with, you know, a few control issues, right? You know, with some a massive ego, but also an outstanding patriot, if nothing else. You know, he loves America. So the idea is like you conspired with one of America's biggest enemies to get where you are. First of all, you're diminishing the accomplishment that he believes he did all by himself, right? Because he's a giant egomaniac. And you're questioning his patriotism all at once. And you're doing it every day for 90% of your freaking coverage on 90% of the news outlets. So, of course, that person is going to do things probably that are questionable. He's going to say things that are touchy feely, you know, in terms of, oh my gosh, he's, you know, you're on the verge of doing something criminal here.
Right.
And lucky for him, he had an infrastructure around him to keep him from doing that stuff. So that's
their
good.
Job.
That's exactly their job.
You know, Dave Glover pointed out something interesting on his show the other day when we were talking about this. That's why you have lawyers.
Yeah.
When you go to your lawyer and you say, I'm mad about something and I want to do this, and the lawyer says, I'm sorry, we can't do this. Like, okay, the lawyer just told you what you can and can't do and protected you from, you know, doing something that's illegal. That's what lawyers do.
I had a friend who used to rent houses. You know, his name may or not be Gabe Pfeiffer. And you know, there were these people were living in the house for months without paying, and how that is. You're trying to get them out. You can't deal with them, and you're trying to comply with the law. And one day, I was so angry. I said, you know what? I'm just gonna take all the doors off of the dang house, and maybe they will leave. Right? They're my doors.
Right?
I'm gonna take these doors. Yeah, that's illegal. and somebody told me that. So guess what didn't happen?
They didn't take the doors off.
Right. But guess
what? So you were protected by...
I was protected by my legal counsel and my friends around me and my wife, thankfully. That's why you get one of those. Get a good one. And you keep from doing really bad things.
I've been amazingly sheltered from the Mueller report. I don't know how being here...
I was going to say, you were not here on Thursday.
I know.
What are you talking about?
So I've just been reading headlines almost. most and just kind of picking up pieces of things here and there. What is it exactly that he did that was even so shady? Was it wanting to fire Mueller? Is that the thing?
I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. He was looking to fire somebody or to force his previous AG out of his recusal.
Yeah.
There was some other kind of, he was trying to, how do you put it? He was instructing various people to manipulate the situation. Yeah. Exactly.
Which, you're the president.
And his lawyer would say, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But he would say, doggone it.
But those things don't even sound like they're that wrong or shady
in the grand scheme. And I guess the thing is, this is all in the light of the fact that we know he didn't do the underlying crime.
And Dave, who's a lawyer, pointed this out too. If I say to Ryan, I freaking hate Gabe and I'm going to kill him, and Ryan says, you shouldn't kill him.
that
would be bad.
That's illegal.
You might go to jail for that. And I go, duh, you're right. I'm not guilty of murder.
Right.
Because you stopped me.
Or conspiracy to murder or anything like that.
So if a lawyer stops you from doing something, you didn't do the crime.
Right. So what they're harping on is, boy, I want to get rid of that Mueller.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's one of them. that's the big one. But right. That's one of them.
It's pretty nuts.
Here's my take it back another step. I don't think this has changed anybody's mind. We have more details. The Democrats have looked at this and they have pointed out the parts in it that they say proves that they're right and there was collusion and there was obstruction. The Republicans look at it and they say that it proves that they're right and there's nothing there and the president's fine. And I could even argue each side. I could look at it and put together a case for each side and I could argue either side. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's changed one single mind. Do you?
I don't think it's had
any effect on the American voter.
Well, now, to be fair, a lot of us are junkies. We're all in this stuff all the time. And I think in terms of the sides that were already entrenched, yes, this changed nobody's mind. It doesn't do a good job of convincing one way or the other. But you got to think of all the what I call the normies out there, the people who go about their daily lives not really thinking about this stuff. They occasionally catch a headline. They might watch the evening news before they go to bed, but they're working every day. They're too busy for all this garbage.
Yeah.
So what they're going to hear now is that the investigation is done. There are no charges, but everybody's still mad at Trump. So now they could, I guess, depending on how the coverage goes, how much they actually can hang anything on them, it could still go either way with them. But I'm going to tend towards people being a little smarter than that, and they can see that, yeah, you're tilting at windmills over here.
Yeah. Yep. And here's the one thing that I can promise you. Nothing is over. I think a lot of people thought that once this report came out and we had it in front of us and everybody had a chance to take a look at it and react to it, that, okay, the Mueller report is finally done. It's been released. It's been 2 years. We've seen it. Whatever charges or whatever, indictments came from it, have come from it, and now we're done. We are not done. This argument is going to go all the way, and the Mueller report is going to be a huge piece of the Democrats' argument all the way through the 2020 election, and don't be surprised if we don't see Robert Mueller testifying in front of a House Judiciary Committee. AG Barr is going to probably be back in front of the House Judiciary Committee. This is not anywhere close to being done.
It kind of reminds me of the Jussie Smollett thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, the facts are like, it's just in reverse.
Yeah.
It's like he actually did it.
Right.
Like we know. They laid out the evidence like on the third day.
That's what Trump needs. He needs the guy in Chicago that just took the Jussie Smollett case and just like threw it in the trash.
Yeah, he's like, whatever. Whatever.
We're done with this. There's nothing here anymore. All right, we got to take a quick break. Later on in the hour, we will get to some of the other big headlines from the week, so you can count on that. Also, when we get back, we're going to talk to Pastor John Michael Brown about this ridiculous bill by Cory Booker in the United States Senate about reparations. That's right. It's really happening in the Senate, and we'll talk about it. Don't go anywhere. It's the Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. Thank you. Welcome back to the Weekend Report, FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo in studio with Ryan Wiggins, our producer, and Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher. Check out the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show. Gabe is in for Chris this week, who is on assignment covering some very important Easter family stories that we'll talk about next week. And joining us on the phone, as I mentioned in the last segment now, is our good friend, Pastor John Michael Brown. Great to talk to you, JMB. How you doing?
I'm just marvelous, man. Living a dream.
Yeah, you know it. So I mentioned that first segment that a couple days ago, Gabe and I made a video on this topic that we're going to talk about, and that is the idea of reparations being given to black people in the United States. And it's, reparations has been a topic that has been floated around for years, but now the Senator Cory Booker has introduced a bill in the United States Senate that would study the possibility of reparations for descendants of slaves, embracing a push that has recently caught the interest of fellow 2020 Democratic presidential candidates. So this is happening. This is happening in the United States Senate. This, just because he's introducing the bill doesn't mean it's going to pass, but this is still a discussion that is being held in the United States Senate in 2019 about giving reparations to the descendants of slaves. Gabe is a black man. You're a black man. How does that... Is reparations the answer to race tensions in this country?
I mean, absolutely not. I mean, to think that reparations is going to fix the race problem was no more effective than thinking once we get a black president, it'll fix the race problem. Mm. The race problem goes deeper and reparations, it would probably make things worse. You know, I've always presented this, that if people want to stop talking about the race issue and the effects, just pay out reparations and say you're done with it. We paid reparations. You can't talk about racism or slavery anymore because we paid reparations. But the problem would be is that people who have figured out how to succeed in American society, you know, I'm all for reparations in the sense that give me free money and I'll use it, you know, to my benefit. But a lot of people you give free money to, they'll waste it like they waste the money that they have now. So you can't fix the problems that came about because of years of oppression and slavery by giving people reparations, because the problem is not that they don't have enough money. The problems go deeper and they're more deeply rooted than that. So I don't think it will fix. It's not going to fix the problem, but it would be convenient for those who want to stop talking about the race problem to say, all right, we paid reparations, now let's move on with things.
Hey, John Michael, one of the things that Tony and I mentioned, or I mentioned to Tony when we were doing the video, was I was wondering about the logistics of it. You know, like, all white people have to pay, and then all black people get payment? In which case, our households might have some issues there. What do you say about that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you go back to historically, you were black if you had 1/32nd. So I guess anybody with a 32nd black could receive it, but I think if you look at the numbers, not every white person owned slaves, and there were also free blacks that owned slaves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I approach it kind of like a societal issue. Like, if you want to take tax dollars to pay, because I think it's not, it was a national sin per se. It was a national sin. It wasn't an individual sin. I mean, the entire nation allowed for slavery to go on. So you could pay it with tax dollars. I don't know how much they would pay. I mean, relative to the trillions of dollars we're in debt now, I mean, what's another $1 billion? I don't know.
Right.
But the point I make is, so what if we went another $2 billion in debt for paying reparations? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, did we go any more in debt? But everybody that wants to stop talking about the systemic or blaming historic slavery, we can all get past that, and then we can focus on what I think is more crucial to anyone's success and anyone's ability, and that's personal choice and responsibility. I mean, there were slaves that made personal choices that allowed them to get out of slavery and to build wealth. I mean, through discrimination and Jim Crow and all these things, we've historically seen persons of color be able to overcome the adversities with personal choice encouragement an occasional helping hand here and there, or somebody on their behalf. But until we get to that, it's not. I mean, give people free money all day long, and it's not going to change their circumstance unless they have a mentality that knows what to do with a significant amount of money. You know, rather than buy something new, pay off some debt. I mean. Mm-hmm. That's a serious mentality that a lot of Americans don't have. So it definitely can't fix the problems that we see in the race issue if we were to do that. But I don't know how they would logistically figure that out. But I'll take free money, Gabe, if you'd like to give me some. Tony, I'll take double from your household. And we'll call it even. We'll call it even. We'll say that it's all done. Everyone pay reparations to me, and I will declare that it is all over.
The Columbus.
Slavery is dissolved. The sin of slavery is dissolved in America as long as everyone pays me.
Hey, the Columbos got here in the 1940s. It was too late. Yeah, we're good. We're clear.
Go John ahead. Michael, on that issue of the personal responsibility and you know the things we agree about, by the way, of teaching our communities to rise to the occasion. Do you think the government has any significant or even a partial place to, you know, what do you think the role of the government could or should be in that regard of teaching those values?
I mean, I guess first they have to stop exploiting the issue and dodging the issue. I mean, both sides are just be honest that the circumstances that people are in now are connected to historic racism. I mean, I can connect a lot of cultural deficiencies in the black culture to historic discrimination, racism, slavery. But at the same time, I mean, where you're at now, you have to start where you're at now and go where you want to go. But I think the government can, I guess, just be honest about things and then, you know, point out, here's your opportunity. You know, here's your opportunity. We've talked before about the job opportunities that are out there, the ability for minorities to make wealth because of government regulations on how many contractors have to be minorities or some of these trades that are just not looked at in the black community as being, you know, a valued job or profession. So I think just showing people, here's your opportunity. I'm sorry where you're at, but here's an opportunity that you have to get out of your circumstance. Here are the government programs that are already in place to help you. I mean, I just think that people are so ignorant of what has already been done in regard to that. I mean, America's been trying to easily ease the guilt of historic racism through programs and whatnot. But
and are all those just supposed to go away? Like, if reparations happens, does that mean equal opportunity, the NAACP, quotas, like you just mentioned, John Michael, this many things like the Rooney Rule in the NFL. Does all that stuff just go away the next day because, hey, we paid it up. We're all whole here. Let's move forward.
That's what I'm telling the people that want to get rid of.
My guess is that's not how it would work.
It costs you a whole lot less money, pain and anguish, to take a couple $1 billion and be done with it. It's like a lawsuit. You know, somebody knows they're not guilty. They know that their company is not guilty of something, but they're being sued. Well, we're being sued, so they take the option. We can pay them. We can pay them $1 million now. Or we can fight for $2 million to prove that we're innocent. They don't care. But
I don't think that Al Sharpton's ready to go out of business. So I don't think that if the reparations payment did happen, I don't think those groups are ready to go. Okay, we're all square here. We're all, the NAACP, we can just, board up shop. Like, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
That would be a hilarious strategy to come from the right and say, all right, we'll give you reparations, but we have to get rid of this, and this, and this, and this, and this.
Yeah. I want to ask you both this before we run out of time. We have a couple minutes left, but one of the quotes that Cory Booker, when he was talking, when he was introducing this bill to the Senate, he said, this bill is a way of addressing head-on the persistence of racism, white supremacy, and implicit racial bias in our country. It will bring together the best minds to study the issue and propose solutions that will finally begin to right the economic scales of past harms and make sure we are a country where all dignity and humanity is affirmed. I'm not saying that there aren't still race issues in America, but is it as bad as he paints the picture that there's still the persistence of racism, white supremacy, and implicit racial bias in our country? I feel like we're evolving and getting better as a people, despite what the news would have you believe. And I think what most people on the left would have you believe, I feel like they're the ones that stoke the fire more than anybody as far as trying to create race tensions and racial issues in the country. We have our problems, but are they as bad as the senator sort of lays out in that statement? Go ahead, John.
I would say absolutely not. I mean, it's not, but it's convenient. It's rhetoric. I mean, I just recently heard rhetoric proposed about the problem with our public schools is that the teachers don't look like the students. I mean, and you look at the numbers, 90% of public school teachers are white, and about 50% of public school students are going to be minorities. Well, where are the minorities that are trying to get these jobs, and how is an education, how is mathematics ultimately you have to be taught by somebody your own color?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't even make sense, like some of these, you know, and so we give this rhetoric and people that want an excuse. I think people want an excuse and they get worked up, and it's like, oh yeah, that's what the problem is. It's not. I mean, look at, I don't know the statistics of minorities in the government. Is it equivocal to the number of minorities in our nation?
And yeah, I don't know.
And
I don't believe
are
it
they
is.
To, it's what?
I don't believe it is, no.
It, but, I mean, I don't know if it's more or less,
it's
but
less.
The bottom line is we've had minority politicians in government. So are they also to blame since they've been incapable of changing anything? What were they doing
right.
all this time?
Mm,
yeah.
These governments where they have been totally, you know, like the school district that I was referring to, the entire school district's, you know, higher leadership is African American. So how can you blame the school teachers when the power structure of the district is African American? You know, so it's
yeah.
It's like it doesn't make rational sense, but these people that are making these comments aren't being rational. They're being emotional. And I feel like that's a general tendency. I believe that you should have passion, but I think you can't have passion without logic to back it. And I think when I look at politics, I'm not a political guy, on the right, they tend to be more fact-based. Let's just talk about the facts. And then on the left, they like to play on people's emotions. Now, you know, I'm not saying one is totally right, but I just say when you're trying to look objectively on a situation, you need to have some facts to back your emotion.
Yeah, and that reminds me of a statistic about crime, actually, where there are surveys that show that while crime has been declining, steadily declining for decades and decades and decades, we're in the safest time in America ever, that perception of the proliferation of crime has gone up and up and up. And I think that we can point directly to the media for creating that divide between public perception and reality.
Yeah, I agree. Gabe, do you agree with Pastor Brown that racism is not as bad as the... as Senator Cory Booker would have you believe in that statement?
Yeah, definitely. It's like I said, it compares directly, I think, to that crime statistic. It's been going down steadily and steadily throughout the decades. Yeah. But our perception of it has been increasing, I think more so in recent years because of the way media and social media has pumped up the issue.
Yeah.
The supply of white supremacists is vastly diminished compared to the demand for it by the media.
Yeah. Pastor John, go ahead.
I was going to say, Gabe and I both have the opportunity to kind of weave in and out of these these racial circles, whether it be predominantly white circles or predominantly black circles. And you talk about when it comes to observation, just personal observation, you know, I see a lot less of the things that I would see as racism in those white communities as I see in the black circles, black communities of, I guess, you know, race baiting or calling racism where it's not and still talking about racism. It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, you know, like, really? We really believe that still? I mean, okay, move on with your life, man. Move on with your life. That's not how it is. There's not a bunch of guys in white hoods in the back room plotting against you. I mean, they're those people probably in the country, but they're not in every business in the secret room with a secret handshake that says, "Oh, we're gonna ruin your life. Yeah. We just can't stand you."
Yeah. No, I promise. I've never been in any meeting that's resembled that in any way. Listen,
you would say that. You would say that. You're guilty.
Now, when Italians get together, we do some shady stuff, but not, we don't go quite to that level.
No.
Never mind. We got to wrap it up. We got to end it there. Pastor John Michael Brown, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds great.
All right.
See
and
you Sunday.
If you do want to hear more of this discussion, like I mentioned earlier, go to the Weekend Report page, 971talk.com/weekendreport, or just go to the 971 YouTube channel. Gabe and I shot a video just a couple days on this very topic right after this news came out about Cory Booker and slave reparations. So if you want to hear more, go and check that video out. All right. We need to take a break. But there's plenty more We Can Report coming. Don't go anywhere. It's FM News Talk 97.1.
Said I do, I miss you.
It's time for your favorite show. The We Can Report is on the radio.
That's right. It's hour number two of the Weekend Report on your radio. Thank you so much for staying with us. Tony Colombo here, producer Ryan Wiggins in the studio. Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher, sticking around for one more. Coming up in the next segment, our buddy Skip Weber will be here for the Weird News Challenge. Trish Gazelle from KEZK, our sister station, is back to try to avenge her losing streak. She's been gone for a little while, but she has decided that she is ready to come back and take Skip on. So don't go anywhere. Keep it here for that. And as I mentioned, as we were closing out the last hour, right now joining us in studio is Charles Summers. And you do a better job of introducing yourself to the folks than I do. I was going to say a podcaster, but you're a soon to be podcaster, putting the show together. So introduce the audience to you and this project that you're working on.
Hi, my name is Charles Summers, and I'm a 56-year-old licensed union plumber and a political junkie. I've loved this all my life, and I've got my kids raised, and I'm looking to pursue my passion, and my passion is politics.
Yeah.
And I'm looking to make something happen, especially in the city of St. Louis. And my first show, I'm going to be hosting a podcast called Conversation Forum. And the first show is going to be on criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is something that really needs to happen in St. Louis and actually every big city across the country.
Yeah. So let's start there, criminal justice reform. 30,000-foot view. When you're talking about criminal justice reform, what are some of the glaring problems, some of the glaring issues, some of the things that we need to tackle right away?
I think the first one is the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. I think that pushes a lot of criminal injustice in our system, and I think legalizing marijuana and taking those tax revenues, they call marijuana the gateway drug, and I think it's a gateway to a problem solution.
Yeah,
it's a solution.
Sure,
and I think you use that tax revenue and invested in education, invested in rehabilitation. You can rehabilitate somebody for a third of the cost of what it costs to incarcerate them.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana is not an addictive drug, and I mean it's been around for decades and decades. Medicinal has been around. Legalization. If you look at some of the states that have legalized, what they're doing with the tax revenue, they're doing good things with it. And I think if you take that and plow that right back into the system, I think you can really affect the problem.
People, yeah. 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 I'm not going to get any argument from me. You don't stand on that same side, do you?
Well, I'm of two minds about the whole thing. Because the libertarian side of me just says, you know, just I can make the philosophical case that all drugs should be legal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of them.
Personal choice, freedom, bodily
autonomy, all that kind of thing. But at the same time, the more practical side of me looks at the externalities. And that's really what all the war on drugs is kind of built around, is dealing with the externalities of the drug trade. Mm. Externalities being, you know, well, when people are on certain types of drugs like cocaine or PCP and things like that, their autonomy is kind of removed. You know, they don't think correctly. They don't make good decisions. So and that usually ends up in criminality and violence and things like that.
But to Charles' point,
on marijuana specifically?
Yeah, like especially on nonviolent amounts of marijuana, does that person belong in jail?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think you know, you can so long as it is a criminal so long as it is a crime to possess something, I think we should still prosecute crimes that are, you know, things like that. But small possession type things, I think, should probably be relegated to fines and community service type of things, as opposed to sending them to prison where they're going to be in contact with the real hard, you know, drug lords and all these other things. And that's a lot of the petty criminals get further criminalized by going to prison.
Yeah.
That things I found. Yeah. I actually made a video on prison reform in particular. I'm just wondering actually what your stance is on what to do inside prisons. I heard you mention the whole idea of rehabilitation, and I'm a big advocate of that aspect, I think, which is often neglected in the prison system.
See, I'd wipe out our prison system the way it is currently and completely change it. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take our prison system and actually turn them into recycling centers. I think you should take a big U-shaped building and take in the dump of it in the middle, and that's where you dump the trash, sort it, pay these guys a wage, a living wage, where they can actually store money. So when they do get done with their term, they've got a stipend to get out on. You start with three hots and a cot. That's all you get. If you want anything more than that, you got to pull it out of your wages that you're pulling out of this system to pay for it. And two of the wings would be for the prisoners, and then one would be for the rehabilitation side. Mm. And that's like the addictive drugs, the ones where people do get addicted on.
Where they need detox and counseling.
Yeah. Exactly.
And all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's an interesting idea. It sounds like what you're talking about is creating a micro community.
And working. And
that's interesting.
Getting up every day, working for a living, just like you'd be doing on the outside. It'd be teaching them how to be a responsible adult.
Right, right.
And
remedial society.
You know, St. Patrick Center here in downtown St. Louis.
Yeah.
They deal with homeless people. Mm-hmm. But their big thing is, and we've worked with them, I've worked with them a lot over the years on various radio stations. Their big thing is don't give a handout to a homeless person, you know, show them where we are, introduce them to the St. Patrick Center, and they have they have businesses that they run that they put these homeless people to work in. So exactly to your point, Charles, they teach these people how to work, they give them a skill, they give them something they can put on their resume, and then they hopefully have rehabilitated them to the point where they can go out and they can now use these skills that they have learned by working in these restaurants or wherever they were.
Yeah, seeing that rehabilitation side would be open to the homeless, because a lot of those people have drug problems. I mean, that's that's why they're at where they're at.
Right.
And that rehabilitation side would be open to the homeless, where they could come up and they could work if they want to make a living, if they want to get themselves a hand up to help out and get out. They had that opportunity to do so.
I think it's a fascinating idea.
That's a really
neat
idea.
But I'm sure you've already heard some of the pushback that you would get on that. You know, so you're saying, so the cynical side of me says, we're going to pay criminals? You're going to bring in criminals and you're going to pay them? You're going to give them jobs? And what, in your mind, what
type of jobs? What are they doing? What type of jobs are these criminals going to be able to do while they're in prison?
They would be sorting the trash for recyclables.
And
what you do is, yeah, then what you do is you bundle that and you sell it as on the open market as raw goods, and you take those monies, and that's what pays for the prisoners. So you're actually helping the taxpayer, because right now the taxpayer is picking up the whole tab. So if they're working themselves and help paying for it, then that reduces the amount. And if you decriminalize a lot of the drugs, then you take a lot of the people that are in there out, so it makes room for the people that really need to be in there, the people that, you know, armed robberies and the people that do, you know, the heinous crimes. You make room for them because you got rid of all the people that are really a harm to society. Drug addiction is a sickness. It's not a crime. And I think if you treat it like that, I think you're going to have a lot better, you know, return on your investment.
Yeah. We're talking to Charles Summers. He's putting together a podcast. Talk about, off the air, we were talking a minute there about your philosophy for the discussions, the type of discussions that you want to have on this podcast. You were talking about getting people from all different backgrounds in the same room and having a conversation. How important is that to have all sides represented in a conversation, and how do you keep them from just immediately going partisan and throwing their hands up and saying, I'm not listening to you, and just, you know, storming out of the room? How do you keep everybody, that conversation, going?
Well, I think when it comes to especially stuff like this, criminal justice reform, I think we have a lot more in common that separates us, and everybody wants everybody to, you know, to have a good life and, you know, to live a good life. Conservatives, progressives, everybody wants their tax dollars to work, you know, and what we're doing right now doesn't work. And I think I've got a lot of, I'm a progressive myself, and I've got a lot of conservative friends, you know, that I interact with, you know, on social media, and we get along fine. We have conversations all the time. I don't agree with them, they don't agree with me, but that's fine. We can still have the conversation, and I think if you can get people, they can sit down and see that, you know, you're not an evil person. You're just a normal guy. I'm just a normal guy. I'm just looking for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're looking for. I think the conversation can be had, and I think once you start having that conversation, I think the solutions come afterwards.
Very good. That is Charles Summers. We will keep our eyes open for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Tell folks, do you have already any social media, anything that websites, social media, anything that people can follow and keep an eye on you, so when this podcast is ready and it's out there, they can start consuming it?
Right now, if they go to conversationforum.com, you can register for the show, and all your information remains private. I'm not going to let anybody see it. I just want some information about you so I can get the most diverse audience that I can. But everything remains private. So go to conversationforum.com and register, and I hope to see you.
Yeah, very good. We'll keep an eye open for it, and once you're up and running, we'll have you back on.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Charles Summers, thanks so much for your time today. We got to take a quick break, but it is time for the Weird News Challenge. Skip Weber's here, Trish Gazelle is here, so don't go anywhere. Weird News Challenge coming up next on The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.